All right, Derek Brandale says we are good to go. He's alongside David Sis Boom Baugh upstairs, pushing all the right buttons. I'm Nick Kiprios, Justin Bourne, Sammy McKee. It's the Real Kipper and Bourne Show. Leaf edition. A very interesting Leaf edition to our show. So wherever you are watching, listening, Sportsnet 590, Sportsnet 360, Sportsnet Plus from 4 to 6, glad you're aboard. If you can't catch us live, download us wherever you get your pod. A good day today for us anyways. We got together, the three of us, along with Kevin Bieksa. Fun day today.
Fun day.
That's awesome.
Where we also learned of the news of Sheldon Keefe.
Yes.
I think it was the first hole.
It was at the wrong time in the day for a bunch of Leaf guys.
I had got a call saying that he was no longer the coach of the Toronto Maple Leafs.
And then you parred six straight holes.
Then you guys asked me if I was tweeting it. I'm like, no, that let Elliot do that. Yeah. Somebody else do that. I'm focusing on trying to go minus one in the front nine at your golf course. But thanks for having us today.
Yes, it's a pleasure. Thanks for coming. Right? Awesome having
you guys. Best part
here.
Of the day, beating Sammy and Kevin Bieksa.
Team Kipper and Bourne.
On our match play where Kevin bought lunch.
Yeah, because of me. I missed that. That birdie putt on 11 from 2 feet will haunt me.
Sammy almost had a hole in one, had a two-footer that we made him putt.
As you can see, these guys, if you're watching on Sportsnet, you can see that these guys had a chance to have lunch and have a shower. I came straight here.
So I got here to do the labor.
The golf. It's very appropriate that on a day the head coach of the Toronto Maple Leafs gets fired because of a bad playoff outing and golf involved, that I'm wearing a golf outfit. It works out well.
And I can hear everybody right now going,
I don't care.
On this day, you guys start us off with your stupid match today, and you're not discussing Sheldon Keefe, no longer the head coach of the Toronto Maple Leafs, relieved of his role as head coach. As announced by Brad Treliving through the Toronto Maple Leafs. And all right, just open it up, JB. I mean, no real surprise, but I'll let you say that.
Yeah, you know, we've been saying that this is kind of one of the few buttons they had to push. Couldn't be the same. Didn't seem like Shanahan was going somewhere. You know, making a trade of a big player, which we'll get to, is complicated. This just felt like he had had enough tries, you know, where you basically said someone else has to have a turn at this. You know, guys know I think he's a good coach and did a good job here. I think he can be proud of his time with the Leafs. I think his 665 winning percentage is the best among regular season coaches of the minimum 300 games. But alas, he did not get over the hump, and he said so himself today. He accepts and understands why it happened.
I do, you know, look at his time here, and like you said, the 665 point percentage and minimum 300 games, you know, the worst playoff series record, minimum five series. Frank Patrick never won one in seven tries. Bob Barry went 1-7. Sheldon Keefe went 1-5. The amount of stuff that didn't go their way in one, like, we have a chance, you know, they hired him after Babs got fired and he was looked upon as a sort of, you know, fresher mind and all this.
The next one.
Yeah, a couple bounces go different ways here for him. And listen, he had his mistakes. He's made himself like any coach does.
Yeah.
But the game sevens, the game five in the bubble, like all these little things that just didn't break their way completely changed the narrative on what it could have been with Sheldon Keefe here. And I think it's the right choice. I think it was time to go. But I don't, like, could have been a lot better for Sheldon.
Yeah.
It just these one game.
I said as much the other day. A little unlucky.
Listen, but I think the best coaching we've seen, I saw out of Sheldon Keefe for probably the last month, 6 weeks, where he looked for the first time as a really solid NHL, how to get your team ready for the playoffs, what should they look like, all of that came at the very end. And yes, they were one goal shy of advancing to the second round, but too late.
Yeah.
Too late. The stubbornness, the being reluctant to change your lines and give a different look from Austin to Mitch to Tavares to Nylander.
It's just, you know, something that we haven't really looked at much.
Like, why did it take you so long?
Yeah.
Right? The announcement that we're going to try Nylander at center at training camp, and it never got a sniff. Never. Like, just too late for the guy.
You know, you hear people saying it's more commonly accepted that a coach in his second stop tends to have his most success. That tends to be why. And the reason is you learn a lot of lessons your first time around. And I think if Sheldon looked at the early part of his tenure here where it was, we're going to be puck possession, we're not going to be this Babs, go forward, dump it in, we're going to hang on, we're going to make plays. Eventually, they got back to Babs' way, right? Mm. They got back to this possession thing is killing us in playoffs and we're in our own zone and it felt less, like some wasted.
Less gambling, less cheating, no Willie and maybe others floating around the far blue line for that stretch pass that I've hated for 3 years, four years. That kind of got cleaned up at the end, but not enough time for Sheldon.
No, not enough time and not the wrong decision necessarily. So, you know, I guess I don't hear anyone saying this is stupid. They shouldn't have done it.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lot of what now, right? Because they did get rid of a coach who had success here, was familiar with the program, and they had some stability.
The writing was on the wall, and if I'm not mistaken, he didn't have to speak earlier in the week but chose to.
Yeah.
Yep.
So that was a sign that he wasn't going to make it to Friday.
He had some idea. And then today, he took to social media and had the chance to make a statement. And I think instead of going on a bunch of shows, he's just decided to just say what he had to say.
I mean, I was kind of surprised to see it because we did hear from him.
He probably did it
earlier in the
days
week.
Ago. He probably knew he was, you know, he's like, I'll put this in the you can know. For when I need it.
I found it a little sappy, but.
Do you want to play it?
We have it?
We
sure.
We actually have a video of it. If you want to play it. Yeah, we want to play it. Yeah.
The whole station.
Yeah.
Oh. Time has come to say goodbye.
No, maybe we don't.
Writing down a note and sending it out didn't seem like enough. And it.
Oh. Did we stop it? Here we
there
go.
He
oh,
is.
Here we go.
There he is.
Are we playing it? Just his face.
Is he in the Bahamas? Where is he right now?
Yeah, we just have his
face. He could be anywhere on the globe, essentially, but a desert.
No, we think like, you know, we're thinking Lake Ontario, a cottage.
He might be
a
in
lake.
Cabo. I don't know.
Might That's... be in Cabo, but for those of you that cannot see our video or our show on Sportsnet, he taped this. In front of a lake or a body
it's
of water.
Nice setting,
and it's a beautiful
birds.
Setting.
You know what? Okay. Part of it is like he's in his own heaven. There's like this relief where.
Right?
Are we going to do it?
I don't know. Are we doing this or can anybody up there talk to me? All right, let's play it. Oh. Can't hear it.
Writing down a note and sending it out didn't seem like enough. And I do plan on taking a little break from media. So here I am. I'm forever grateful for the opportunity to coach the Toronto Maple Leafs. It's a dream come true for a boy from Brampton. I want to thank Kyle Dubas, Lou Lamoriello, Brad Treliving, Brandon Pridham, Brendan Shanahan, Larry Tannenbaum, and the MLSE board for giving me this opportunity to work with the Marlies and Leafs. I didn't get it done in the playoffs. I didn't help push our team over the line and deliver. I accept responsibility for that. No excuses. That's the job. I didn't get it done. It's the reality of the business, and I accept it. To the players, I appreciate all your efforts. Your talents and your work ethic made me look good on a lot of nights. Anyone who suited up for blue and white, I appreciate you. To the support staff of the Maple Leafs, you're tremendous people, and you're elite at what you do. Players and support staff will drive the team to success. I believe it will win. Leafs Nation, you deserve your Stanley Cup. Your passion at home and on the road is unmatched. It's an incredible honor to coach the Maple Leafs, to try to deliver for you. To the media, had to deal with you every single day, sometimes twice a day, three times a day. I appreciate your process. I respected the fact that you're honest and fair and had a job to do. I hope you appreciated the fact that I helped you do it. I don't know what comes next, but I know I'll be ready for it. In the meantime, I'll enjoy giving my family the time that they deserve. Love you all, and be well.
And thank you to the Real Kipper and Bourne Show, who came up with some wonderful ideas, which I never used any of them.
Not to make light of this, because lost his job, but I can't help but think of Anchorman. But he's like, I've got some urgent and breaking news. Cannonball. That's all I could think of.
We're laughing. He's got two-year contract extension at some millions of dollars.
It actually looked like he was sitting on like a skidoo, and he might just rip off.
He's sitting probably on $4 million the next 2 years. Like I'd have that smile on my face in front of a beautiful lake or ocean.
There has to be some relief. Like I did a good job over my years there. Didn't get it done. I can hold my head up high.
Yeah, but he said that on what? Monday?
Yeah.
He said it already.
Yeah.
But that's fine. He didn't hurt himself.
No.
And let's be honest. That's not for media or the fans. No. That's for the next team.
Yeah.
And I think that's how you go about it. I think that is as classy as it gets. Blames himself. Thanks, everybody. Puts it out, smiling right in front of a lake.
Yeah.
And everyone's like, oh, he's a great guy.
You're right. Like, he got flooded with calls today. I'm not going to take every individual call. Put this thing out there. Put it to bed.
What I gotta say.
Nobody's going to be asking for anything else anytime soon now. And just hang out.
Yeah. It really, there is something freeing about that video. So good on him. He's, he can, he'll probably have some other opportunities, I would imagine, very soon. So.
Yeah. Oh. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, you talk about how he did a good job and they had a great winning percentage, but he will be a big part of the legacy of this group of people will look back on it. And you talk about the regular season record, but a lot of his teams here, they didn't really get it done. And I think he knows that. And I think that's part of the $3 million or $4 million USD helps that or whatever, but that will be part of his legacy here. There's no question. You can't get by it.
It just seemed like he never got it right with this group. And just in terms of when to push them hard or when to back off, it was always questioned, right? And then there was that very famous backpedaling on soft. Yeah. What was soft, the magic word?
Well, you call him soft and purposeless.
Just how he played soft.
There you go.
Right?
But, this is all, this market, it's going to do this to whoever is the coach, but I do think the first time you're a head coach to be handed the Toronto Maple Leafs and these tools, that's a handful. A learning experience in itself. And I imagine you have some confidence after that, but
yeah, him going somewhere else now, I don't know who I saw, but the Devils may be interested, going to somewhere else after being the Leafs head coach is oh God, this is, this is a lot.
I
less
bet you he
stress.
Doesn't go somewhere else.
You don't think?
I bet you he doesn't coach. Take a year. His boys are their teens are in Toronto.
Let me tell you something. If there's an opportunity there and it's,
you don't make any more money to go do it. I guess it's just that there aren't many.
Well, you're
going to
cover your $2 million.
Yeah.
The question is, do you want to sit home on the couch making $2 million or do you want to go work on an NHL bench making $2 million? Yeah, I'm asking the wrong guy.
Answer? Yeah.
Couch.
I'm finding you on the first tee.
Yeah. No. Yeah. I get it. There's not many jobs. Yeah.
So
you have the chance to win in Jersey.
When the Leafs scheduled their press conference, their managerial press conference, it was for Thursday, and then they pushed it back to Friday, and now we know why, right?
But it is a little had they planned then to fire Sheldon on Thursday? And if so, why? Why was it not done Tuesday
because
or Wednesday?
They were making phone calls all week.
I'll ask you, Nick Kiprios, have they made phone calls to anyone in particular that you're aware of?
Yes.
Oh.
Yeah. Mm. Craig Berube.
He has taken a call.
Todd McClellan.
Okay.
There's been calls in for Joel Quenneville, inquiries and calls in to find out his situation.
Yeah.
And this is part of what makes Brad Tree Living.
Mm-hmm.
He's making calls. What's out there?
Yeah.
What's available? What isn't available? Let me know. That's what's been going on all week.
Mm-hmm. Does feel like the Leafs have the money and Berube's the big name. And he's
what do you think about Joel Quenneville? Let me ask you, JP.
Well, that's it's a loaded question because.
For sure it
because
is.
Because I just don't know I still don't feel like I know what happened in Chicago. And so I think he's the best available coach. And I think he would do a really good job with this group. I'd like to see him as the coach. I don't know.
It's the baggage.
It's a lot of baggage, and it's a distraction on top of, you know, if you have moral issues, does that affect a certain portion of the fan base? I don't know. I don't know how I feel about it.
It's a big statement, and, you know, I think if you are hiring Joel Quenneville, that is a change in philosophy for the Toronto Maple Leafs in terms of the, like,
Not willing to have Corey Perry.
Like, I mean, I've often joked that, like, the Leafs they want to win the PR Cup as opposed to the Stanley Cup. Like, mm-hmm. They really care about the public perception, and they're very involved with the community and all the different people that they've hired and all this stuff. If you do that, you are prioritizing the on the ice, we're winning product over your public relation. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if it's the right choice. If Joel Quenneville is the head coach of the Toronto Maple Leafs, probably going to be pretty excited, as you know, he's a Stanley Cup winner and all. He's been out of the game a while, but it's a complicated one for me. I really don't know how to feel about it yet. That one takes some thinking for me.
Yeah, I don't know where in terms of public perception would be. Like,
hard hire for a new GM and Brandon to make, don't you think? Like, given their statuses, like, Brandon feels like he's on thin ice. I think is probably, he might say the same about his own position. And Tree's pretty new. That feels like a hard hire to make. Do you think it's likely? Like, it's a serious...
No. So it's... Of course, if there wasn't the baggage,
yeah,
he's one of the most successful coaches in history.
Yeah.
It would be Babcock-like, mm-hmm. whereas, yeah, we've got some things underneath it. Remember the story about Guy Boucher almost being named head coach, mm-hmm. being in the same building, but we're going to go get the big whale. Mm-hmm. We're going to go get the... And Joel would be the big whale here without the baggage, but they're tied forever.
Yeah.
So I don't know whether or not the media or the fan perception will be like... Not comparing situations, of course, to Corey Perry, but not a lot of people ended up still trying to figure out what happened to him in Chicago. It's mm-hmm. over and everybody's moving on. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that can happen here or not. I have no idea. I grew up in this town. I've watched it for my whole life. I can't even answer. Yeah. I can't even come close to answering
to
yes
answer
or no on that.
A lot of questions.
How long has he been out now?
3 years.
3 years, right? Because that was during the first year we did the show that was all coming out. So yeah, 3 years. I don't know. Like, how long is long enough? Maybe never coming back would not be long enough for people. I don't know.
Definitely that's the answer in some people's.
I don't know.
Yeah.
It's a complicated one, but do you think so? Who are they calling on that, Kipper? They calling the league about it? They calling him about it?
Gary.
Like, do you think he would want to do it?
Listen, he went on Strix's podcast
Strick.
2 weeks ago, three weeks ago.
Maybe whatever.
A month ago.
Yeah, whatever it is.
You're going there so you can start to rehabilitate your image, or, you know, what people perceive of you. You're not going up there just to do Andy a favor. You're trying to find a way to get your name and your reputation back in some way, whatever that means, and to coach again in the National Hockey League.
And I think he will coach again. I don't think it'll be here. I think... Tomorrow morning at the press conference, they're going to tell us that Craig Berube's been named the coach.
You do?
I'm not sure if that's going to happen that quickly. I don't know. You could be right. We're spitballing here.
Yeah, 100%.
I don't get a sense that it's going to be that quick here.
What about the assistant coaches? They still have their job.
I don't know if they were ever mentioned today.
No, they weren't.
But you want one of the coaches that went... Oh, for a gazillion on the power play? One for a gazillion on the power play?
Yeah. No, not really.
It
makes no sense to get rid of Sheldon and then bring anyone back from that.
The PK had been good in years past, but wasn't this year.
Yeah.
You know, Mike Van Rijn, he's an interesting one because he worked with Berube.
Yes.
In St. Louis.
Might be a chance that if you hire Craig Berube, he says, I want him. I've worked with him before, and I want him to stay. I'm sure that's a conversation that could happen, or the Leafs say, no, we want fresh people here, new ideas.
Yeah. You know, It's tough to know, right? Like, you don't follow the St. Louis Blues close enough to know if Berube is, like, some sort of master tactician.
Yeah.
Do you think that's what they need?
Well, here's... Go ahead.
I was just going to say, though, but if... Is he the whale right now for the Toronto Maple Leafs? Because I keep hearing Todd McClellan is of great interest to the Leafs as well. They're making calls on him in terms of more research on him. People speak very highly of Todd.
Yeah. You know, Luke Fox had an article today, and in the article he talked about how Sheldon Keefe got all these things right. But one thing, you know, and the players said all the right things in their exit interviews about Sheldon, but no one ever said, like, I would run through a wall for that guy. Like, that guy inspires me to go, I would just, whatever it takes. Well, Berube, I don't think gets all the little things right necessarily, but I think he does inspire guys.
So we had a great conversation with Kevin Bieksa, yeah. And we just weighed out the pros and cons of X's and O's compared to a guy that can just make you feel like you just described.
Yeah. Well, you watched, I mean, they had those clips of the Sheldon pregame stuff where he was talking about, like, getting the team ready and him going into game 7 overtime. Like, let's have fun with it. And I was like, okay. And then that's side by side with the clip of Berube before game 7 against the Bruins when he was coaching the Blues. We're a good hockey team. We're going to win it. Yeah. Like, he's just like, it's just a different thing completely.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think after all those years of Keefe, wouldn't a little bit of a curveball changeup probably be the direction you'd want to go?
In the short term, sure.
Yeah. That's what I mean.
So that conversation you're talking about, did Kevin give you a conclusion, his opinion on what?
Yeah. Yeah, find a guy that can push the right buttons.
In terms of
motivation and inspire.
You know, the NHL is a copycat league. And you look at the systems the Leafs play. You know, they're one of, I don't know, half the league probably uses a 1-2-2 in the neutral zone. You know, there's not many ways to forecheck. You can send an extra guy if you want, but everyone's kind of doing similar things. Special teams, to me, is actually embarrassing for the league that teams don't get more creative than they do. But the point I'm making is that it does feel like motivation matters when everyone does some version of the same thing. I don't think anyone's coming in with, you know, what is it in total football? You know, is it the Netherlands? No one's coming in here and playing positionless hockey in the NHL anytime
soon. Like Sheldon tried that at the start, kind of.
Well, everyone has this fantasy that it was heading there, and it never, you get to playoffs, and
that
the curve
work.
Of the game didn't curve. Yeah. It just stayed straight.
In about, 12, 15 minutes, we're going to welcome in Frank Cervelli from Daily Faceoff. And we'll get maybe some more names out of him. We'll get the latest on what he's hearing. Mm-hmm. But in the meantime, we have to have a conversation on tomorrow and what we expect out of tomorrow between MLSE CEO
Keith Belly,
President Brendan Shanahan, and General Manager Brad Tree Living. Mm-hmm. So floor is yours, JB. What do we expect?
I expect a lot of saying the right thing. The results haven't been there. We understand that. Things have to be different. We can't just run it back. The only thing I'm really going to be paying attention to here, well, obviously any coaching announcement, but in the past, they've made strong commitments to the core four, and we believe that we're close. Yeah. I'm curious to see if the tone struck is different. In the past, I didn't disagree with running it back. I'm different than a lot of people. I did disagree with, like, not making those guys wonder or worry for a sec, like immediately being like, you guys are fine.
Yeah.
Don't have a moment where you feel like you're twisting in the wind. Like, it's okay to make people a little nervous sometimes. And in the past, they've been very reticent to do that.
I wrote an article today for my weekly article on the Toronto Star. And I basically said the opposite, that you got to make hard decisions now. Yeah. That would include the easiest way to alleviate the salary cap. And I pointed the direction of the contracts with Mitch Marner and John Tavares, one more each for them going into UFA. And the focus has to be as early as this summer on better balance in your lineup, better balance on the salary cap, which includes focus on the blue line and goaltending.
How soon could something like that take place? Like, you can't, when, I don't, you can make trades now.
You can make trades as long as they don't include anybody that's currently playing. Mm-hmm.
Rarely happens, though.
Rarely happens. I can't think of it ever happening. No, it has happened.
Yeah?
Yeah, they're not big trades, but there are some minor league trades that have gone on the last few years between non-competing clubs.
I'm sure Gary would love it if at least traded Mitch Marner during the Florida-Dallas final.
At least some would be interesting.
No one's talking about the game.
Yeah. Well, that's going to be something to keep an eye on. It's interesting that you include Tavares in that, that you think that both guys could get approached. Now, it is contingent on both players at least being willing to consider other opportunities. You think Mitch would?
Yeah, I do. Yeah, I do, because we can certainly sit here and discuss and debate whether or not, you know, he's just had his fill of being the whipping boy and not, he's, I'm sure he feels like he's happy to share the blame, but somehow I get the brunt of it a lot more than the Marner or the Matthews and the Rileys and the Tavareses and the Nylanders. And he could be very well tired of it at this point in his career and look for a change in itself on that. But the driving force for me, which I mentioned in my article today, was that, you know, this guy's still in his prime. Mm-hmm. He's going to max out a 7 or 8 year deal, and he will continue to be amongst the highest paid players in the game, which could mean on an 8 year deal, upwards of $100 million. That trumps staying and playing for your local team.
Mm-hmm. Particularly if you play income, you know, no tax, you're in Nashville or you're in Carolina or you're in, you know, Florida, whatever places, you know, or Vegas,
Utah.
Utah, what's the tax situation in Utah?
I think it's a lower tax rate. But anyway, I don't know exactly. Okay. But yeah, I could see that incentivizing him a little bit to make that decision. And then it comes down to what sort of value a guy like Mitch Marner has, because obviously he's the 100-point guy. He's young. He's. I've just been informed Utah has a 4.85% tax rate. Does that help anyone?
No, I don't know.
It's not a no state tax.
It's low.
It's low.
And what do we have here? 100% tax?
130.
If you are going to trade Mitch Marner, and I ask this question to both of you guys, that's a massive trade for the franchise in terms of nailing it, getting everything right. Like, what are you looking in for
Kerfoot
in return?
Kerfoot and Tyson Berry, ideally.
Oh, my God.
Exactly. Kerfoot and Berry.
No, but honestly, like,
that's a good lesson learned, is it not?
That is a lesson.
Is it, are you prioritizing trying to find defense? Are you looking for to restock the cupboards with picks?
As long as you have salary cap freedom, then you can either find a blue chip player now, or you could just take assets in itself.
Like, if you gave
two first-rounders, a prospect, instead of like your stud 26-year-old D, you can get him on the UFA now.
Yeah.
So it doesn't really matter, Sammy, as long as you have...
Oh, I think it matters.
No, what matters is that you bring back valuable assets that you can even flip at the trade deadline. Mm-hmm. There's no need to say, I have to get a number one D for Mitch Marner now. As long as you move his 10.9 out, I can go get him in UFA.
Yeah, I can go get Pesci and or Montour.
We were talking about forwards we want before the show out there, and I was like, and this has nothing to do with, like, this is what they should do for Marner. But, like, Jordan Martinook is a free agent in Carolina. Love him. And you like Chandler Stephenson.
Love Chandler Stephenson,
You know, like, there's guys out there in UFA. So I'm just saying cap space has value, too.
Go ahead.
It is a terrifying trade to make, because there's been tons of times over this last 7 years, and I get the perception around Marner, and I'm part of it. He's not my favorite guy either, and I'm part of the negative side of it, getting down on him in the playoffs. I am. And Kipper, I know it pisses you off. But
no, it doesn't piss me off. But I also listen to you. No. Listen, Sammy, you're no different than everybody else out there.
Yeah.
You're with Marner, win or tie, right? Win or tie.
Win or tie.
We've had conversations where we've said, we've all opened the show and, like, Mitch Marner's validated now, right?
Well, that's what I'm worried about.
He's 10.9. He deserves all of it. He's playing amazing and blah, 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 blah. And then, not my favorite now today.
But I just think it's a terrifying trade because of how many times we've sat here and talked about how, you know, there's been times where he's been the least best player. When the offensive production out of him, he's a winger.
It's a dangerous trade.
But the reason Aaron's trade is like, man, the odds of him winning the Conn Smythe Trophy one day aren't nil.
It's not zero.
I'll tell you why it's a very dangerous trade is because we've seen him at his best, providing that 100-point guy, killing penalties.
Never actually got to 100 points.
Stop it.
It's true.
Making plays that no one else can make, right? And then you're like, wow. Yeah. And now you want to take it out of your lineup and replace it with what?
That's the thing. You make a trade, you want to bring something back that is going to give you a bit of offense at least.
Yeah. The Marner haters listening to that are saying, replace what? You know, the postseason, you're not replacing the same thing.
Still got to get there.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Still got to get there. Okay. We're going to take a break. And I don't know how much time we have here because we're going to welcome in Frank Saravelli and we're going to get into this with him as well. But I know we went into trading Marner, but like, here's a question for you going into tomorrow.
Okay.
Who's deciding this for you?
What do you mean?
Is it
who's in charge after tomorrow to make
Keith Pelley
trades or have the final say, or who gets to stamp it now moving forward?
I think our show as a committee should. That's what I think.
All the more reason to just say exactly what I just said about how terrifying a trade this is. Because, listen, Brad Treliving did an all right job in this offseason, brought in some guys they like. But, I mean, his trade record isn't perfect. His moves aren't perfect. He's made some good ones. I guess every GM's made some good ones and bad ones. But it's just, I'm not sure I want him to be the one pulling the trigger on a franchise-altering trade.
Is that fair?
But he's the GM.
I know.
Listen, this really opens up a whole debate of this title that, I don't know how long it's been around now, 10, 15 years, but president of hockey ops. And we've seen some of these Hall of Famers come in and get them, and it's like we're still not sure on like how much power that wielded over the 10 years for Brendan. Like, was Brendan,
I think it's
the
evolved.
Was Brendan the guy in 10 years that someone like Kyle Dubas needed to come in at the final second, knock on the door and say, can I do this trade? Because I'm led to believe that Kyle had the power to go and do these things without Brendan. And I'm not even sure if I believe that or not.
Well,
but that's the question that kind of needs to be asked moving forward. Where does it work moving forward, Keith Pelley? After your press conference, is it Brendan still the president? The buck stops with Brendan. Brendan has final say on trades. Does he not? Is this now Brad Treliving making all these decisions? Are they doing it together? Yeah. Is it collaborative?
For 10 years, he's been the president, and the role of president in the NHL has changed over those 10 years. They have become more hockey involved rather than business people. And right around the time it really changed, he went from Lou Lamoriello to Kyle Dubas. Lou Lamoriello wasn't asking him for anything. Lou Lamoriello doesn't operate like that. And Kyle probably had to a little bit more, which is part of the reason Kyle wanted more authority in the first place.
So
great point, and one that I'd never even thought of. But
Doug McLean for a very long time here. So when we were at Sportsnet, he was one of the first to phrase hearing about president of hockey ops as, "Oh, they made up the fake GM."
Yeah,
that's a fake GM job, which means
is the fake one, GM or president.
GM
is the fake job.
Yes.
Okay.
No.
It was like Joe Sakic, like he's homered into the bushes. Yes. Like, that's the GM now.
Right? So it's like, okay, you got this president title, but when you know what hits the fan, like, where are we going on this?
The bullets are flying, so, and you're holding your GM in front of you.
You know, they trade for an injured Nick Foligno. Like, Kyle Dubas? Oh, I don't know. Tyson Berry for... And Kerfoot for Kadri. Naz Kadri. Is that Lou? Just Lou?
I don't know.
Lou and, like, so it's hard to say. It's hard to say. And now, the one thing that you can't deny is that it got ugly towards the end between Kyle Dubas and Brendan.
Oh, no, right? Of course. Yes.
Yeah. And Kyle was starting to make decisions. Did he run everything by Brendan? Did he just do it on his own? Did Brendan feel like not involved enough?
Mm-hmm.
Those are the questions that need answering from Keith Pelley, I think, and I'm not sure how many answers we'll get publicly tomorrow on it.
Mm. But give us the organizational hierarchy. Who's making the hockey decisions?
We should go.
Exactly.
Hockey. We should
go. All right. Plenty more to dive into, including Frank Saravelli from Daily Faceoff will join us next on The Real Kipper and Bourne Show.
Teeing up the biggest games of the night, it's the Fan Pregame with Ailish Forfar and Justin Cuthbert.
Weekdays at 6 p.m. on Sportsnet, Sportsnet 590 The Fan, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to The Real Kipper and Bourne Show, Toronto Maple Leaf edition. In this first hour, let's welcome in Frank Saravelli, Hockey Insider, president of hockey content for Daily Faceoff, a busy guy out west covering the Vancouver Canucks, Edmonton Oilers, but lucky enough to bring him along to maybe help us figure out who the next head coach of the Toronto Maple Leafs will be. And the answer is, Frank?
I don't know.
The answer is, well, thanks for joining us, Frank.
Yeah, we'll see you guys. I think the true answer is Brad Treliving doesn't know. I'm sure he's got a short list of guys that he's really intrigued by. My understanding he has already begun to reach out to candidates to begin those conversations and to eventually line up interviews. I don't get the sense this is going to be something that's going to be wrapped up in the next 24 or 48 hours or anything like that. They've got time, and I think they intend to work through the process.
Earlier in the show, Frank, we discussed the name Joel Quenneville. It's my understanding that calls have been made, inquiries, maybe figuring out the status of Joel Quenneville. How realistic is it that something like that could get further evolve, or is this a simple yes or no from the league?
Right now, it's a no, unless something changes that I don't know about. His future and ability to earn a living in the NHL is completely in the hands of Commissioner Gary Bettman. I think that's maybe the toughest part about all of this for Joel Quenneville, and I'll include Stan Bowman in the same category as well. Two guys that would like to be working that haven't received a sentence, which if the answer is you can never coach or work in the National Hockey League again, I don't know that they'd be happy about that or fine with it, but it's not having any sentence at all that makes this even tougher. When will they be let back in? We're in now I believe a third hiring cycle that has precluded to this point them participating in that. And I think teams would like to know, because there would be interest in both of these men for jobs. And then, to say nothing of them individually, when will we get an answer? When will we know if and when we are able to return to work?
Yeah, it's fascinating to watch. It's also fascinating to watch your new setup. It looks like you're in a rap video from the 1990s, and I really like it. I just want to let you know.
I would say the toilet stall that I'm sitting in, or feels like I'm sitting in, is decidedly less cool than a 90s rap video, but
good choice.
I'll go with what you got.
Yeah, good choice, Frank.
Fair enough. I want to get your thoughts on, you know, the Leafs have to do big things. People are talking about the core four. Mitch Marner's name comes up as a guy who could be moved. Same with John Tavares. His name comes up as someone fans would like to see approached. What do you think the possibility of those guys getting dealt would be? And sort of what kind of market would there be were they to be available?
Well, I'll start with John Tavares because, you know, I think probably even John Tavares would be one to tell you that his play is not entirely commensurate with the pay that he's earning and the cap hit that he's taking in. That's the way it works in the NHL sometimes, especially as you get to the latter stages of a long-term deal. That said, I think there's probably a pretty really small likelihood that he's going to be playing in any uniform other than a Toronto Maple Leafs one, blue and white next season. And the reason for that is, I don't know that you approach your captain. I don't know that you make that type of decision. And I'll actually take it a step further. Yes, John Tavares has not played at a level commensurate necessarily production-wise to his pay. But I think if we want to have a larger conversation, John Tavares' play has actually been fascinating to watch him evolve from someone that arrived as this kind of power forward that's turned himself into an elite net front presence that, hey, I look at the first round series, and if we're not talking cap hits because, you know, we only can kind of judge and view players through that prism, he did still contribute and find a way to factor into two game-winning goals in that seven-game series. So now let's move on to Mitch Marner and have that conversation and rip the Band-Aid off, because I think that's going to be a much more difficult conversation. Now, I've heard and seen and read, there's been no shortage of ink spilled on the idea of, oh, well, he's part of the core four. He eventually needs a new contract. But in the meantime, he has a no move clause where he holds all the cards. And I've said this before, I don't necessarily buy into that notion that because Mitch Marner has a no move clause, that there isn't a way to make a change to this Leafs core if you want to. I think the conversation could be as blunt or as nice as they want to put it, but it's really just as simple as, Mitch, we really appreciate everything that you've done here, but when your contract expires, we are not offering you a new one. We are not bringing you back on an extension. So whether you have already played your last game as a Leaf or whether you will be at some point whenever next season ends, that's going to be it for you. And if you want, you have the contractual right to head into your contract season, you know, in parentheses, for a team that might not want you. And you can go out and try and play through that, or you could just work with us and we could rip that Band-Aid off and address that situation now. So a long-winded way of saying there is malleability to this core. It's much needed. There is also other contracts coming off the books where there's flexibility. So there's lots that the Leafs can do and Brad Treliving can do, as he's now gotten a full season of evaluation to begin to put his stamp for real on this roster.
We're talking to Frank Saravelli, Hockey Insider, with Daily Faceoff. So let's dive into that a little bit more here, because there's going to be thoughts of maybe re-signing Max Domi. Do you want Bertuzzi, Joel Edmondson? There's the raise of Nylander and Matthews. There's a minimal that the cap's going up. It's not very comfortable for GMs again next year. Even if you move Marner, is that enough to go out and drop some serious coin on UFAs to get defense and goalies? If you're at that stage, Frank, where you're asking and telling Mitch Marner that it's going to end for you, like, very soon here, one way or another, so let's do this now, why not do the same thing to John Tavares and get his 11 off the books, or half of it off the books?
Well, the answer why is that you're trading from an immediate disadvantage. You're dealing with a player who isn't, as I mentioned, commensurate, playing at a level commensurate to his pay. But Mitch Marner, regular season wise, at least is. And I know there's a ton of teams that have already sort of whispered to me, hey, what do you know? Will this guy become available? And what do you think the Leafs would be looking for in order to make something like this happen? Because they see the 95 to 100 point seasons. They see the creativity. They see a decently complete game. And they say, what if we were able to get him outside of the fishbowl and his hometown team, where he really seems to wear a lot of it? And could we make magic happen with him? So I think there's enough teams interested in Marner that it's a totally different conversation than dealing at a disadvantage from Tavares, to say nothing of the sort of culture part of, when you go and begin to have that conversation with a guy that's your team captain. So is there enough flexibility? Can they do something different? How vastly different can this team look in the fall? I think the answer is pretty significantly different when you consider some of those free agents. I mean, I think there's reason to entertain conversations with Domi and Bertuzzi based on the way the second half of the season went. But I think when you really begin to diagnose and dissect what the Leafs are dealing with, guys, we all know that their defense core is, for the most part, on paper, it's not a Stanley Cup contending defense core. Yet the scariest part of their round one exit for me is that they weren't an issue at all. That wasn't the reason they lost to the Bruins. It's because of the way their cap table is structured and the guys that they're paying humongous money to aren't producing. 13 out of the last 14 playoff games, 2 goals or less. If that's the supposed strength of your team and it's what has repeatedly continued to fail you, you got to go back to the drawing board.
Yeah. And they, you know, it's not just, you mentioned the other guys, Domi and Bertuzzi. I think they have like 12 UFAs or something. It's some sort of huge number. Do you think that some of the deadline things they did, like would Labushkin come back? Would Edmondson come back? Some of these fringe pieces, how much interest would there be in retaining them?
I think probably a pretty fair amount. I mean, you let Labushkin walk once and you go, I know different regime, but you go and get him again. Mm-hmm. I think there's reasons to think that, you know, someone like him and an inexpensive depth role can help you. I just think they've got a million different ways that they can play this. And I'm sure it's some combination of guys that you keep and then also, you know, certainly some new blood that's able to come in. And so I think a lot of people, Leaf fans, just based on what I see in the reaction, they'd like to see more new blood than not. Mm-hmm. And I can understand why.
How long do the Leafs need to hire a head coach here? How quickly will this happen? Berube, McClellan, what are you hearing on them?
I don't think it's going to be crazy long. I mean, I think probably stretches some time into, you know, next week. I think, as I mentioned, they've already begun to contact some of these people to begin lining this up. I think Craig Berube is going to be really high on their list. But by no means do I think that's a fait accompli or anything like that. And in some ways, I'm actually more intrigued by what the domino effect of this, you know, vacancy that now exists. We've all thought that it was trending in this direction, but once the Leafs pull the trigger, the New Jersey Devils are well down the track with Craig Berube and Todd McClellan. Mm-hmm. Do they suddenly speed this up and say, we want to make sure we get the guy that we want and prefer? Or do the Leafs now, you know, with some of the gravitational pull or, you know, magnetic pull that comes with being in Toronto, does that muscle and might and attractiveness of that job, does that sort of change how some of these candidates might look at it? I think that's also a fair question.
We'll wait and see. The fireworks start tomorrow midday for the Toronto Maple Leafs when three of the bosses show up for a press conference. Hey, Frank, great stuff, man. Thanks for doing this. Enjoy the rest of the playoffs, okay? And we'll have you on again soon.
Never a dull moment, guys. Have a good one.
Thanks, Frank.
Frank Cervelli. Another name, too. Gabby, Bruce Boudreau.
Mm-hmm.
I heard he hired either Elliot or Gord Stellick to either be his agent or press
dude, if
press
they
guy.
Hired Bruce Boudreau, that would be awesome. That would be so awesome. Coach Kippers Clippers would be unbelievable.
I do have a little fear of the next coach. Like, they need to be kind of good talker. What the hell are we going to do in the first segment next year if it's like Berube is short?
Buddy, we're finding Sheldon on a couch somewhere by the lake.
Maybe we can hire Sheldon as a correspondent just for old time's sake.
Quickly before I go, one of the biggest Leaf fans in the world, Justin Bieber.
Yeah.
Announced today on Instagram that him and his wife Haley are pregnant. So there you go.
A little bee bit.
Little bee. There you go. Right.
Tim Bieber.
Biggest Leaf fan in the world, Justin Bieber. Congratulations to the
Shout
Biebs.
Shout out to the Biebs.
Congratulations.
Sure, they're already shopping for giant jackets as we speak.
I love it. Love
All
it.
Right.
Yeah. Love it.
This roller coaster ain't stopping anytime soon on the Real Kipper and Board Show as we go national next. We'll welcome in Craig Simpson, Hockey Night in Canada. Stick around. There's more.